This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up last night, the president announced his choice to fill the vacancy on the Supreme Court. Judge Neil Gorsuch from the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals. What kind of judge has he been, and what can we expect from him as a justice? Princeton professor Robbie George joins me in just a moment. Also, George Soros is using your money to undermine conservative democracies in Europe. New Jersey Congressman Chris Smith has the shocking evidence and information about what you can do. And could Congress be on the verge of fumbling on the effort to repeal Obamacare? Former chairman of the House Freedom Caucus, Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan, is here on that story. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. All right, last night, I was on hand at the White House in the East Room when President Trump presented his nominee for the Supreme Court to the nation on live television. The appeals court judge, Neil Gorsuch, he's a 49-year-old circuit judge of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 10th Circuit, which covers Colorado, Kansas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, Utah, and Wyoming. Now, what kind of judge has he been? He's been on the court for 10 years. And what can we expect as a justice on the Supreme Court? Here to discuss this nomination, Professor Robert George holds the Princeton Celebrated McCormick Chair in Jurisprudence and is the founding director of the James Madison Program in American Ideals and Institutions. And to me, one of the greatest legal minds in the country. Robbie, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Oh, thank you so much, Tony. It's a pleasure to be back with you.
Well, I will tell you, as we have combed through the potential justices prior to the nominations, when I saw you early on or a few weeks back say very positive things about Judge Gorsuch, I took notice of that. Why do you think he will make a good justice?
Well, I think he was the very best possible pick. If we look at the traditional criteria for judging the fitness and excellence of potential judges, he's at the top in every category. Let's begin with quality of mind, intellect. Well, he's at the very top there. He's one of the most intelligent jurists that I certainly have ever known. I've known Judge Gorsuch now for probably about 15 years. We've had many opportunities to interact. His book, his excellent book on assisted suicide and euthanasia, was published in the book series that I edit, Princeton University Press. So I had the pleasure of working with him on that. And he's just a brilliant man. This is supported, his natural intellectual talents are supported by a first-class education. He's a graduate of Columbia University, Harvard Law School. He won both Truman and Marshall scholarships, two of the most prestigious scholarships in higher education. He went on to Oxford University, where he earned his doctorate, something very few judges have in addition to law degrees. He has a doctorate in the philosophy of law. He studied there with the very eminent philosopher of law and theorist of natural law and natural rights, John Finnis, who happened to be my own doctoral supervisor when I did my doctorate at Oxford. He published that excellent book. He's published other important scholarly writings. And then there are his opinions, which are first class. I mean, not only are they analytically deep and precise, they're lucidly written. He's one of the best writers in the federal judiciary. So we've got a superstar here intellectually. Well, what about the next set of criteria? Well, let's look at his temperament. Well, he's a level-headed person. He's a thoughtful person. He's the opposite of somebody who flies off the handle or makes rash judgments or anything like that. He carefully thinks his way through the legal issues he's confronted with and arrives at a rational judgment. Let's look at his integrity. There's not a mark against the man. He's a good father, faithful husband, generous friend, man of the highest probity, devout man. You'll be pleased, Tony, that he's going to integrate the court. He's going to bring diversity to the court because it's currently six Catholic members and or was six Catholic members until Justice Scalia died and three Jewish members. And we'll finally have a Protestant on the court. Yale's an Episcopalian.
People don't realize that, but that is true. There has not been a Protestant member of the court.
Not for some time. Of course, there was a time when the court was mostly Protestant. There have been times when it was entirely Protestant. But we haven't had a Protestant since David Souter left the court. So that brings that element of diversity back into the picture. But of course, the truth is that his religion doesn't matter. What matters is that he's a faithful constitutionalist. He's a textualist and an originalist. He believes that judges shouldn't be imposing their own values on the nation, but faithfully following the principles entrenched in the Constitution, enshrined in the Constitution by the founders and ratifiers. And when it comes to the interpretation of statutes, it's the will of the legislature, not the judge, that matters. The judge's role is not to make law.
Yes.
Shouldn't be doing that. When he does that, he's stealing the constitutional power of the legislative branch.
And he even,
the role
he,
of the judge is to apply it.
He included that in his remarks last night after the president presented him to the nation. He underscored that.
That's exactly right. And then we go back to the category of experience, another criterion for judging the fitness and excellence of a candidate for judicial office. Well, he finished his education. He spent a year in the Justice Department getting executive branch experience. He spent a decade in a very distinguished law firm in the private practice of law, seeing what the actual work of lawyers is, representing clients, handling cases. And now he spent the next decade, the decade after that, on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 10th Circuit, where he's compiled a wonderful record for excellence. He's known as, here's the one respect in which he's unlike Scalia. He's very Scalia-like in many ways, Tony. He's a textualist, he's a constitutionalist, he's an originalist, he's a faithful interpreter of the law, he doesn't make the law. But here's one way in which he and Nino Scalia are quite different. Neil does not have that pugnacious, fiery Scalia personality.
Mm-hmm.
His demeanor is really quite the opposite. It's very calm, very bookish. He's a kind of scholar, a scholar in the black robe. When he engages with the lawyers who appear before him in oral arguments, he doesn't try to knock them around or argue with them or intimidate them. He rather asks questions in the form of a kind of conversation that's meant to elicit answers that will enable him truly to judge the strengths and weaknesses of the arguments that they presented in the written briefs, and to give him an opportunity to raise questions about issues that he thought weren't sufficiently well-developed or addressed in the written briefs. So that's a bit of a difference, but that's really a stylistic difference.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Professor Robert George, my guest. We're discussing the president's selection for the Supreme Court. Neil Gorsuch, he's a judge on the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals. The president last night presenting him to the nation as his choice. Robbie, let me ask you this, because this has been front and center in this election. It was a major issue in determining how people voted. You know, evangelicals, Catholics, social conservatives. This was a motivating factor because they knew this vacancy existed on the court. The president, as a candidate, the first I recall of a nominee specifically stating he was going to appoint pro-life justices that were constitutionalists, that would not, you know, find things in the shadows of the Constitution. You covered that. Let me ask you this. His pro-life perspective, his pro-life views, very limited in his opinions on the life issue. But there's other writings that suggest that he has a basic fundamental understanding of the value of human life.
Well, that's certainly true. Now, it seems to me that what matters is not whether he is pro-life or not, although, Tony, you know I'm very strongly pro-life myself and have been involved in the pro-life movement as an activist since I was 13 or 14 years old. But what matters to me most fundamentally is that he's a constitutionalist.
Mm-hmm.
The ground for, the constitutional ground for reversing Roe versus Wade, and it's overwhelming. The constitutional ground is that that there's no basis in the text or logic or structure or historical understanding of the Constitution for a right to abortion. This was imposed on the nation by a raw act of judicial power, to quote the dissenting justice, one of the dissenting justices in the case, Byron White. It was manufactured out of whole cloth by liberal jurists to change the laws of the nation. And Gorsuch will, I believe, I predict, vote to overturn Roe versus Wade, not because it's an anti-life decision, though it is, but because it's a constitutional abomination. It's a usurpation of the powers of the elected representatives of the people. But as to your specific question on his views about life, There you want to go to the book that he published in my series at Princeton University Press. The book is called The Future of Assisted Suicide and Euthanasia. And there he considers very carefully, thoughtfully, all the arguments that have been put forward for assisted suicide and euthanasia and comes down against them. And he comes down against them fundamentally on the ground that human life is intrinsically valuable. We don't have our value only because of our abilities or talents or our strength or our beauty or any other extrinsic factor about us. We have our value intrinsically. It's just in virtue of being a human being. You know, people on the left often talk about how they're all for human rights. They're great human rights advocates, human rights activists. But when it comes to abortion, when it comes to euthanasia and assisted suicide, suddenly they don't believe that we have our rights in virtue of our humanity. They think we have our rights in virtue of something else, having been born or reached a certain stage of development or being cognitively functioning at a high level or being healthy and not handicapped. Gorsuch comes down in favor of the traditional Judeo-Christian principle of sanctity of human life.
Which in many ways is rooted in natural law.
Exactly right. And, of course, as I mentioned, he studied for his doctorate with greatest living natural law theorist John Tennyson of Oxford University.
I quote from his book on this issue, human life is fundamental and inherently valuable. And that the intentional taking of human life by private persons is always wrong. I mean, that's a pretty clear statement.
It's very clear. And that is what the tradition that goes back to Genesis 1 holds. Genesis 1 holds that man is made in the very image and likeness of God. And it doesn't draw distinctions. It doesn't say highly intelligent people are made in the image and likeness of God. Or people who have the use of all four limbs, or people who are not suffering from dementia, or people who are already born. The principle is that each human being is fashioned in the very image and likeness of God, and therefore has his fundamental rights from a more than merely human source. They don't come from a government or a king or a parliament or a congress or a president, and therefore no merely human power can take them away.
Well, two factors that convinced me of this is looking at his background. The fact that the natural law element, because that's something that's been under attack by the left, because the natural law, as Paul talks about in Romans 2, it's written on the hearts of man, the law of God. But also your endorsement.
Gentiles who don't have the law of Moses, St. Paul says, nevertheless have some understanding of right and wrong that comes from their natural understanding, their natural reason.
It's the fingerprint of the Creator on our conscience is what it is. And it's hard to escape. And then, of course, your support speaks a lot because I consider you to be one of the brightest legal minds in the country when it comes to interpreting the Constitution as it is. Robbie, we're out of time, but I want to thank you for joining us. And obviously, as this process continues, there's going to be a lot of talk about it. We'll get you back on to talk more about it.
Call on me anytime, Tony. It's a pleasure to be back on the show, and thanks for your work.
All right. Professor Robert George from Princeton. This guy is, I think he's going to be good for all the reasons we just talked about. We will be tracking this because the Democrats say they're going to do everything they can to stop the president's pick. Well, you're going to have to weigh in. You're going to need to speak to your senators and let them know what you think about this. All right, coming up next is billionaire communist George Soros using U.S. funds to influence elections in Europe. After the break, Congressman Chris Smith will join us with some shocking, shocking evidence. Don't go away. We're back with more Washington Watch after this.
One of the great freedoms that most Americans enjoy is the ability to get involved in political campaigns. But what about pastors? Unfortunately, due to a little-known amendment that was passed in 1954 at President Lyndon Johnson's urging, churches and other nonprofit organizations are prohibited from making statements for or against a candidate for public office if they want to remain tax-exempt. This is just one of the many problems with the Johnson Amendment. Not only does fear of IRS action put a chill on the free speech of pastors, it restrains other nonprofit organizations from participating in the debate of public policy in their area of expertise. In addition, the IRS only rarely enforces the Johnson Amendment, causing widespread confusion about what constitutes lawful political speech and what doesn't. For more information on how to amend the Johnson Amendment, visit frc.org/Johnson Amendment. That's frc.org/Johnson Amendment.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. What's on your wish list for President Trump's first 100 days in office? Defund Planned Parenthood, nominate a conservative Supreme Court justice, strengthen the military, repeal and replace Obamacare. Perhaps you, like me, would say all of the above and then some. I earnestly pray that God will work through this administration to bring about these priorities. However, neither our new president nor these policies will bring about the restoration we ultimately need. Our nation's greatest need before the election is the same today: repentance. Before the election, many were calling for prayer and repentance. Now that it seems we have a reprieve from the left's agenda, that call has dissipated, yet America's spiritual condition hasn't changed. Our sins are immense. Our greatest need is not a president, but the revival that only God can bring. Join me in praying for that. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
The rapid response arm of 8 Days of Hope is responding to tornado victims in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. On January 21st, a tornado severely damaged hundreds of homes and killed 4 people. Will you please volunteer to help Hattiesburg residents? Here's 8 Days of Hope director, Steve Tiber.
We need your help today. I mean, it's that simple. We're looking for people who just want to serve others. You know, you don't have to be super gifted. Every disaster gives an opportunity for a believer to share a glimpse of Jesus Christ. You know, the best sermon I ever heard was the one I saw. We're just there to love others as God commands us. And here's where you and I get to be the hands and feet of Jesus Christ.
To volunteer to help with Hattiesburg Tornado Relief, please visit 8daysofhope.com. Financial donations are also needed to support this ministry effort. To give, please visit 8daysofhope.com and pray for this relief effort and for the families affected by this devastating tornado. 8 Days of Hope is a nonprofit Christian ministry.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Wednesday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, @TPerkins. A lot to come here tonight. Still got a lot more to talk about. A lot happening here in Washington. Busy week. Busy year, actually. Look, shortly after the U.S. had their elections in November, the Republic of Macedonia, part of the former Yugoslavia, held their elections in December. Now, this country, which was birthed in 1991, has been dominated by a conservative governing ideology modeled after the United States. I mean, really, Ronald Reagan gave birth to this, and they took these principles, and guess what? It worked. Free markets, personal responsibility. And their economy just took off. I mean, they've been growing. Small country. But about the size of Vermont, but very, very successful. In their election in December, the conservatives narrowly won the election. The reason? I mean, was it because the conservative ideology didn't work? No. Billionaire George Soros teamed up with our State Department and has targeted Macedonia along with other European democracies using your tax dollars. Well, here to help us answer the question as to why, how did this happen, is New Jersey Congressman Chris Smith. He represents the 4th Congressional District. He is a senior member of the House Committee on Foreign Affairs. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, thank you so very much. Great to be on.
Well, I know you have brought attention to this. You and some of your colleagues have written a letter to the ambassador there in Macedonia about this, but I think Americans would be shocked to know that George Soros has been teaming up with the United States government through USAID and the State Department to fund leftist organizations. In fact, the old Communist Party there to try to overthrow the current conservative government.
It is outrageous that the United States would be funding an NGO, the Open Soros' Open Society Foundation, Tony, that and the money is very significant. Matter of fact, there's still money in the pipeline for 2017 to 2021, $9.5 million. And, you know, we're not supposed to be taking sides. When we provide money for civic education or other similarly named programs, civil society projects, it's supposed to be about building capacity, open and free media, you know, that operates in a way that we would hope the media would operate, free and fair elections. And instead, Soros' people, and we've asked questions of Ambassador Jess Bailey, U.S. Ambassador to Macedonia, very, very significant questions, a whole slew of them, about funding an organization that then funds the ultra-left in Macedonia with an eye towards changing the laws, but also changing who gets elected. This is, you know, this is, a, like I said, outrageous. Under Obama, there was almost no transparency on a lot of these projects. We saw it in Kenya when, under the guise of civil society, the U.S. government paid $60 million to 81, and I actually had to get an IG investigation because they would not tell me how much they were paying and to whom it was going, that rewrote their constitution to put a right to abortion into the constitution. And the wordsmithing from that language came from an NGO that we funded. The legislature in Kenya didn't want it, but it was done to them, not for or with them. And so now we see in Macedonia, and this is taking place, we believe, there needs to be a top-to-bottom review at the State Department to ensure that this kind of aggressive partisanship doesn't take place. I mean, it's one thing to do election monitoring, which is a very noble cause to make sure there's free and fair elections. It's quite another thing to be backing individuals and parties that that Soros and his gang want to see in control of that country. That's not what U.S. dollars should be used for. It's a total misuse by the Obama administration.
And this is not just, you know, peaceful, you know, discussions about ideological differences. This, in some cases, is funding organizations. There's a number of these organizations that got front money from Soros. Once they were set up, they got grants from USAID and other branches of our federal government. They are inciting violence. They're rioting. They're doing a lot of what we see here in the United States right now in Washington, D.C., post-election or post-swearing-in of Donald Trump. So, I mean, this is stuff that is completely anti-democratic in what they're doing, and it's our tax dollars.
It is true, and it's also, it violates the principle that the United States foreign aid should not be promoting one candidate over another. I mean,
right.
Who are we to be telling the people of Macedonia, this is who you vote for, and then to provide money to an organization that helps them to hone a message, often in a very distorting way. You know, it should all be about how you have a civil society sector, an independent media, that ensures citizens are well informed. Not that you're backing people who have an agenda.
I mean, this looks like
under Soros. I mean, this is a absolute outrage that our tax dollars are being misspent in this fashion. As I said, I've taken on the State Department on a number of these, especially with Kenya. And now we find out that, you know, under the radar, Soros is funding the ultra-left in Macedonia trying to topple a government.
I mean, this has all the makings of someone like a community organizer that's doing this globally. Chris, we're almost
with
out of time.
With taxpayer funds.
Exactly. With taxpayer funds working against us. Almost out of time, but is Macedonia the only place they're doing this?
No, we know that Soros is involved all over the world, in Central and South America, and the key question is whether or not if he does it with his own dime, there's not a whole
it's
lot of except to provide visibility to what they're doing. But there's no way that the United States government should be aiding and abetting an organization or organizations, because they're usually multiple,
right,
that have taken sides in these elections.
Quickly,
our role.
Quickly, is Macedonia being targeted because of their success as a conservative nation?
I think that ought to be seen as a part of it. We've asked very serious questions of Ambassador Bailey. Again, I'm going to back this up with an Inspector General's request to make sure that they investigate this. It took me a year, a full year, and two IG investigations to discover what Obama did in Kenya. A full year. We provided money to Islamic groups to get out the vote for a plebiscite on their new constitution. I have the spreadsheet to this day.
Okay.
Where they said, get us 10,000 votes in the Islamic community.
We got to go. But when you get this information, these answers, let us know. We want to get you back on to talk about
it. Thank you, Tony. Appreciate it very much.
All right, folks, don't go away. We're right back after this.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Saudi Arabia, their oil minister, praised Donald Trump's energy policies. He said he welcomes the increase in American oil production. Yes, that's what I said. As long as they grow in line with global energy demand. Well, global energy demand is one of the problems, certainly. And I think it's rather funny that he is welcoming American oil production. This is an organization that's been working very hard to put out of business the frackers around this country. They thought by allowing the oil prices to continue to drop that surely, because fracking is such an expensive operation, that they wouldn't be able to exist. They'd be no longer profitable at these low oil rates. What happened was that Saudi Arabia and OPEC did the frackers a great service. I would submit that they did all of our oil producers here in America a great service. They forced our oil producers to get more efficient, more effective in what they do and how they use technology to extract oil, thereby lowering their cost for every barrel of oil that they take. So now we are seeing at current prices where fracking companies are far more profitable than they would have been a couple of years ago at these current prices. But nonetheless, they're excited about Donald Trump's policies and said overall, these policies are good for the oil industry. No doubt about that. Anytime you do anything to promote industrial growth and manufacturing, it's going to be good for energy.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
You're listening to Washington Watch. Glad to have you along on this Wednesday afternoon. TonyPerkins.com, the website. All right, we're going to continue to talk about what's happening over there in Macedonia, because this is the bigger problem I've been talking about for over a month now at the State Department, and why it's so important to have a change agent at the State Department. Now, Rex Tillerson has been confirmed. I don't think he's going to be the change agent. But we've got to drive this administration, encourage this administration to make the necessary changes so your tax dollars are not going to groups like George Soros that undermine the very things that America stands for. So anyway, we're going to keep you posted on that. Chris is going to come back on when he gets some answers to his questions. Well, one of President Trump's top campaign promises was to repeal and replace Obamacare. Initially, it was said the repeal would be by way of reconciliation. That was the measure that passed back in December 2015, sent on to the president, Obama at the time. He vetoed it. It was said that that would be waiting for President Trump when he was sworn in. Well, that deadline came and it went. Subsequent deadlines have been moved and still no action. Could Congress, could they fumble this effort and fail to repeal Obamacare? Here to discuss this is the congressman from Ohio. He is the former chairman of the Freedom Caucus, our good friend Congressman Jim Jordan. Jim, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Good to be with you, Tony.
All right. People are watching, and we've missed some deadlines here on the repeal of Obamacare, a lot of wrangling over getting a replacement package in the reconciliation bill, which has caused some issues. Could Congress fumble this and fail to repeal Obamacare?
We better not, but this Congress is capable of doing all kinds of crazy things. So, but let's hope not, and we should not, and we should, we've talked about this before. Our job is real simple, to do what we told the voters we were going to do, do what they sent us here to do, and a big part of that was to repeal it, repeal every bit of it, every tax, every mandate, and every regulation. And so that's what I'm committed to doing. And frankly, Tony, repeal is, replacement's important, but repeal is the most important, because I start from the premise healthcare gets better and healthcare costs less when Obamacare is gone. So the most important thing is to get rid of what is a terrible law that's been a disaster for families and for our economy. Let's get rid of that. And of course, let's do everything we can to put in place free market principles and family focused principles. But most importantly, let's get rid of the law.
But let's be clear here. There's going to be a wind-down period. I mean, this is not like you're going to vote and it's going to go away tomorrow. It's going to take about 2 years to unwind this. So you have time to come back behind a repeal and have a well-thought-out replacement package that, as you said, is patient-based or market-based, patient-centered health care.
Yeah. No, and look, I'm all for that replacement and those market-based and family-based principles and patient-based principles. I'm all for that policy, those policies happening at the same time. Most of that will probably have to go in a separate piece of legislation that requires a higher vote, requires 60 votes in the Senate to get through. But the most important thing is to get rid of it. I think it's good to do them both together if you can, but the most important thing is don't have Obamacare around messing up the healthcare market.
Yeah, so the way forward here, I would think, is that the reconciliation, which included the repeal of a large portion of Obamacare in December of 2015 and the elimination of funding for 80% of the funding for Planned Parenthood, that passed. The House and the Senate went to the president. He vetoed it. It seems like that would be a good place to start to just pass that bill again.
Yeah, at a minimum, right? At a minimum, that's what we should do. That's the floor. That's at least what we should do, including, as you point out, making sure Planned Parenthood no longer gets taxpayer money. So, but to do something less than that, I mean, imagine this. We're going to put something less on President Trump's desk than we put on President Obama's desk. Well, that would just be crazy. So when people ask me, what about, of course we got to defund Planned Parenthood. What they were engaged in, what they continue to be engaged in is just revolting. So of course they shouldn't get your tax dollars. And we should put on the desk of President Trump exactly at least what we did President Obama. And frankly, if we can get more done that gets to some of the regulations that weren't in that bill, we should do that as well.
Now, there has been discussions in the retreat you all were in last week, and it continues to have discussions about trying to fit in portions of a replacement with the repeal, which has kind of run into some snags because of the tax credit approach to health care, refundable tax credit, with the inability at present to restrict those funds from going to pay for abortion, which in essence is subsidizing abortion and would put us in the same place on that issue as Obamacare has us.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. It's why, you know, you and I prefer tax credits that not the refundable tax credit, which in essence just a payment. That will be, I think, a big debate as we move forward as well. You got to remember, one person's replacement is different than another's. And some people, when they talk about replace, I think they're talking about just a slightly different version, scaled-down version of Obamacare.
Right.
What you and I are talking about is a full repeal of Obamacare and a model that respects the sanctity of life, doesn't allow your tax dollars to go to an organization like Planned Parenthood and to use that money and do the things they've been caught doing, and actually then also opens up a marketplace for the cost of health care. You go out and talk to people who have to buy insurance in the individual market and who aren't eligible for a subsidy. They're paying $400, $500, $600 a month and $5,000 or $6,000 deductible.
It's crazy.
And some of these are young people, like young people who are the healthiest people are paying that kind of. So many of them are like, why in the world would I even get insurance when it costs me this much? What they would prefer is a very high deductible, low cost plan that if they get something really serious, they got coverage.
Right.
And then they can put a few extra dollars.
Hey, Jim, I got to leave it there. We got to go. Folks, don't go away. We're back with more after this.
It is interesting that in our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., the first and last rays of sunlight fall every day upon its tallest building, the 555-foot Washington Monument. And there on its top, inscribed on the four-sided aluminum capstone, are the Latin words Laos Deo, which means praise be to God. This simple expression of praise reflects America's abiding belief that God has blessed our country with liberty and divine favor. Hello, everyone. Tim Wildman again. We're going to Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, for our spiritual heritage tours in June and September, and we'll see this Washington Monument. That's only one of the many monuments and places we'll see. Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation will lead the way as we talk about the places, the time, the events, and the people of our early American Christian heritage. For more information, visit the website spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com.
Consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Sandy Rios in the morning.
This is a time of madness, it really is. This is from the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby. He said, evil attacks the weakest, denies truth and love, is defeated through Jesus Christ. And I just love that. Evil is defeated through Jesus Christ. And so let's not be afraid. And if you are afraid, then, you know, make yourself right with God.
Sandy Rios in the morning. Weekday mornings at 7 Central on American Family Radio.
Oops, there's a piece I missed a little bit.
Grandpa, why do we always pick up litter when we go hiking?
Well, we're just making it nicer for people who come after us a little bit. It's called stewardship.
My grandfather taught me that you should always leave a place better than you found it. That it's important to invest in the lives of your children and grandchildren, leaving them with a godly legacy they can build on. That's why I decided to set up a charitable gift annuity with the AFA Foundation.
It's called stewardship.
I know that my gift will support a ministry that honors the biblical principles I hold dear, and it's a way to invest in the future of our country. The AFA Foundation also arranged for me to have a steady fixed income, so I don't have to worry in the midst of changing times.
Call the AFA Foundation today to find out how you can set up a charitable gift annuity. Just call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad you are with us. If you're driving home, drive safely, but listen intently. All right, a few business items to take care of. Look, I told you this is not a spectator program. This is a participant. All right, democracy, our republic, requires participation, not sideline spectators. Okay, so on this Obamacare thing, I'm serious. I've had a number of conversations with members and others on the Hill yesterday and on the Hill again today. And you need to weigh in. You need to send a strong message to your House members at present that they, look, just repeal it. You got 2 years to work on a replacement. Repeal it, because I'm afraid they're going to miss, the clock's going to run out on this reconciliation. They're going to miss the window. 202-224-3121. 202-224-3121, the Capitol switchboard number to call your member of Congress. I was on the Hill earlier today for a press conference with the House Majority Whip Steve Scalise, James Lankford of Oklahoma, Senator, on the legislation that we had introduced at the end of the last Congress. We reintroduced it today, Free Speech Fairness Act. This is the repeal of the Johnson Amendment. This will ensure that pastors, churches, and other religious organizations are not silenced by the tax code being used as a threat and a form of intimidation to them. Because what's happened is we've seen more and more moral, spiritual, biblical issues have been turned into political issues, and then the government tells politicians or tells pastors to keep your hands off. You can't talk about that. That's a political issue. Life, abortion, that's a political issue. Marriage, human sexuality, oh, that's a political issue. I mean, we saw that in Houston, Texas, where the mayor, in fact, we had two of the Houston Five pastors here for the press conference. One, very compelling, Con Nguyen, who is from Vietnam, a pastor there in Houston, Texas, talked about, you know, I was part of the boat people who came out of Vietnam, and we left there because of the tyranny and the loss of our freedoms. And it started with the loss of freedom of speech and freedom of religion. And he said, you know, I'm here pastoring 30 years, and the doorbell of the church rings, and I'm issued a subpoena. I have 10 days to present all of my communications, sermons, text messages, emails, and about 12 other forms of communication under threat of financial penalty or jail. I was shocked. Thought I was back in Vietnam under the communist. Well, this would address a large portion of that. So that's the Free Speech Fairness Act, and this is something that Donald Trump spoke about during the campaign about repealing the Johnson Amendment. So that's underway. Some questions have come in. I'm going to run out of time here because I want to get to the phone. So I'm going to talk more tomorrow about the executive order that the president said was going to stay in place from Obama. I talked about it at the end of the program yesterday. Been working on that today. I'm still optimistic that we're going to see the administration come out with some clarification and another executive order that will protect religious organizations that do business with the federal government. We're working on that. I appreciate the phone calls and the emails that have come in regarding that. Look, religious liberty is job one for us in protecting it. And so we're on that, and I'll keep you posted. But there was a new poll out by CNN. And this, I want to talk with you about this. This was a study. It was actually, it wasn't by CNN. It was conducted by the Nonpartisan Public Religion Research Institute. CNN was reporting on it. They surveyed Americans by party lines and religious beliefs and asked them what role, if any, God played in the election. Kind of interesting. According to their research, 45% of Republicans believe God wanted to make America great again. Only 18% of Democrats agreed. That's interesting that 18 agreed. 57% of white evangelicals agreed that God intervened. I want to know what you think. Do you think God intervened in this election? 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. I want to know what you think, and I'm going to save time at the end to tell you what I think. So I'm going to let you talk first. But do you think that God had a hand in this election? 57% of white evangelicals agreed that God intervened. 18% of Democrats agreed that God wanted to make America great again. That's, at least you had 18% of Democrats agreeing that America was not great. I don't know what the others, how they explained away the problems that America is facing in the wake of Barack Obama's 8 years as president. So, 866-372-7234. What do you think? Did God have a hand in this election? Did the outcome, was it directed by God? I want to tell you my thoughts on it, but I'm restraining myself because I want to hear from you first. Phone lines are lighting up, but don't be discouraged. Keep dialing. We'll work you in here. We're gonna go. Let's see, where are we gonna go first? I'm gonna try to get a state here that we haven't had in a while. Let's see. Well. All right, hold on just a second. Let's go to Georgia, where Francis is on the line. Francis, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. There is absolutely no evidence that God intervened. God never sent a prophet to say this is next, or Donald Trump is next. Donald Trump being elected did not surprise God, let's be sure of that. But the one thing that I always say to everybody who tells me that God intervened is to remember Habakkuk and the Chaldeans. When Habakkuk was in dismay with what was going on in Israel, he spoke to God, and then God said, I'm going to send the Chaldeans. And he said, Lord, these people are more wicked. This man, Donald Trump, is the most immoral, unethical person ever to be elected in a first term. I look at it as a possible judgment from God.
I'll strike that up in the no column. And he thinks that he is, actually, Francis, if he is a judgment from God, then God's hand was in it. God is sovereign, okay? I think what they're getting at is, did God intervene? Did he stick his hand in this election so that the outcome was such that we saw Donald Trump win? All right, let's go to Ohio where Martin is on the line. Martin, what do you think?
Yes, I have to agree with you that God is sovereign and that he sets up kings and takes down kings. I believe he put up President Obama, and he also has a hand in putting in President Trump.
Okay. All right. Well, I did say God is sovereign. I didn't necessarily say that he intervened in the election, but don't get ahead of me. I'll tell you what I think in a moment. I want to hear from you first. Thank you, Martin, for the call. Appreciate you listening. Let's go to Mississippi where Sherry is on the line. Sherry, what do you think?
Hi. Yes, I actually think God did not intervene. I believe that the people have finally had enough and that the people's moral values are either people that don't have moral values that thought that we were in an economic crisis, felt like someone who was a businessman could do a better job, felt like they were sick of the political garbage, and even people who didn't fight for Christianity were voting and wanted to make a change.
All right. Very good, Sherry. I appreciate you calling in and sharing your thoughts on it. Let's stay in Mississippi and let's talk to Ethel. Ethel, what are your thoughts?
Yes, I believe that God is letting man do exactly what the Bible says man is going to do. So I believe that he didn't have a hand in it. Man is doing what we want to.
All right. Very good. Thank you, Ethel. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Frank in Kentucky. Frank, what do you think?
You can see his fingerprints all over it.
All right. So you're saying God intervened?
Yes, sir.
All right. Frank, thanks for calling. Appreciate your thoughts. Appreciate you being a faithful listener to Washington Watch. All right. We're pretty much evenly split here from those who are saying God intervened and saying he didn't. All right. Let's go to Arkansas where Mike is on the line. Mike, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony, for taking my call, and thank you for all you do.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you.
I don't have any doubt in my mind, and more importantly in my heart, that, you know, this election was another example of what happens when God shows up.
All right.
Nobody expected this, but probably more importantly, I don't think we got a reprieve only for the Supreme Court and borders and the social issues that we all feel so strongly about, but it was to get us all off of our lazy behinds and to stop being complacent and to be obedient to what his word tells us to do. And the Supreme Court can play a role in giving us those freedoms to continue to do that.
I certainly agree with that, Mike. You're without question. And in terms of getting up and getting busy, now is the time to get busy because we have a window of opportunity to correct a lot of errors that actually preceded Barack Obama. Mike, thanks so much for listening. Appreciate you calling. All right, going to take a couple more calls before I give you my take on it. Let's go to Jeremiah in Oklahoma. Jeremiah, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hello. Yeah, I'm going to try and be brief. I believe God had his hand in the election, whether Hillary would have won or not. It doesn't come down to matter who is the better man. It comes down to the matter of what was God's plan for the election. As an American, I'm also a Christian, and I see it as, if Trump wins, it could also be a judgment. But even if Hillary had have won, it would have been a trying of our faith as a country and as the Christians of this country. And really, you have to think about the big picture on not maybe who God was favoring, but what his plan was for all of us as a country.
All right. Very good. I appreciate that, Jeremiah. Thank you so much for listening and calling in. All right, I'm gonna take one more call here before I give you my take on it. Let's go to Missouri, where Sabrina is on the line. Sabrina, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I definitely think God had a hand in this election. Absolutely. With people that a lot of people who said they didn't know who they were voting for. A lot of people who were saying that, you know, they walked up and made the decision there. I think God would put in their minds at that point or sway their decision at that moment to vote for Trump. I mean, I believe that, you know, he's sovereign over everybody's mind and decision in the last moment when they're filling out that, that ballot at the last moment, that he can sway someone's mind and not even know, that person may not even know that God swayed their mind. You know, I believe that He's that sovereign over us in this election. So absolutely.
All right, Sabrina, thank you for your call. Appreciate you listening and calling in. All right, folks, here's what I think to some degree, I agree with all of you, but let me just say how I do believe God intervened, but here's how He intervened. It's how He has, through most of human history, intervened. God chooses to intervene through people. If you look through human history, you look through Old Testament history, the nation of Israel, you look in this nation, there are times when God supernaturally intervenes, you know, where you see like the sun standing still over Gilgal when Joshua was chasing the enemy. There are times when you see supernatural movements. But let's take the rebuilding of the wall around Jerusalem. Nehemiah was involved in. The children of Israel, was it God's plan for His nation to be established? Absolutely. But they had been in captivity, and they were had been back for about 70 years. Temple had been rebuilt about 70 years earlier, or before Nehemiah. The walls were down, though. The nation was in distress. They rebuilt the walls in 52 days. That's a God thing. But how did He do it? Did the bricks just jump up on top of each other? No. He worked through people. He worked through a leader, and He worked through people. I believe that God did work through many people to awaken the church to an understanding that we were in a desperate situation as a nation, losing our freedoms. And I think a lot of the persuasion that took place was over the issues, over the Supreme Court, over religious liberty, over the sanctity of human life, encapsulated in the party platform. In fact, the polling evidence suggests as such. I believe God used His people to awaken a nation and surprise people, as we saw with the high turnout of evangelicals and a record number of them voting for one candidate, Donald Trump in this case. Now, I do not think that Donald Trump, I didn't support him in the primary. I did support him in the general because the choice was very clear. It was between him and Hillary. I did that as a private individual. But it was driven more by the issues and what was at stake, like the courts, like sanctity of human life. I believe we have an opportunity that God has given us because we got up and did something. But the work has not been completed, and the outcome has not been defined. We need to follow through holding this administration and this Congress accountable to the promises that they made and influence them as we can, and make clear that we expect constitutionally based government that honors God. So was God involved? Yes, He was, through His people, through you. Let's stay involved. Continue to make a difference. Folks, thanks so much for listening. Lord willing, we'll be back again tomorrow night. I hope you will as well. Until then, take encouragement from the words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.